This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the New York Yankees official podcast.
It's always good to be in a team that it has a chance and they're going to do the best to win a championship. You know, that I think that's the goal at the end of the day, try to win a championship and try to give you best to the team and the city. It's going to be really fun. It's going to feel like home. It's going to feel great. I think the energy that the Dominicans they bring all over the place is just amazing. For me, I'm just going to focus on baseball. That's my mindset. I'm going to be right there playing baseball every day, hustling every day, try to do my best to help the team.
Hello, hello, and welcome back for a new season of the New York Yankees official podcast. I'm John Schwartz. I'm the deputy editor of Yankees Magazine. Joining me across the Zoom line from a thousand or so miles away, we have Nathan Makaborski, our executive editor. Nate, how's it going?
Good. I'm up here in the New York area. John, where are you at right now?
I'm in Houston. I've been in Mexico. I've been in Tampa. At some point, I imagine, much like the Yankees, I will get back to New York. But in the meantime, Nate, we have an awesome one to start off our season with. I think if you would have asked Yankees fans who do you want to hear most from right now, I'm pretty sure the answer would have been Juan Soto. And we have an exclusive interview from spring training with the newest Yankee superstar.
Yeah, we got a great interview here, John, and just so much excitement around this team heading into opening day. This is the perfect way to kick off season two of the Yankees podcast.
Couldn't agree more. And then we're going to come back and chat about Soto, chat about Mexico, chat about, you know, just some news around the team, some new concessions at Yankee Stadium. And Nate, we also have a really great segment that we're debuting today for this season. It's called History Books. It's with the New York Yankees Senior Museum Curator, Brian Richards. And what Brian's going to do is tell a story. Every episode, a story that, for all the things we know about the Yankees, for all the things we celebrate about the Yankees, hopefully these will be stories that no one knows, no one's heard. So I'm really excited about it. Again, that's called History Books. It'll be at the end of the episode. But much like the anticipation for the first pitch, let's get right to Juan Soto.
In business, much like in baseball, sometimes you need to make a trade to give your team the competitive advantage. Trade location, not tradition. Relocate your business to Boca Raton. Visit businessboca.com. Boca Raton stands as South Florida's premier business destination, offering a low tax rate, cutting-edge facilities, and a skilled workforce, all contributing to a rich legacy of technology and entrepreneurship. But here's the real home run. Boca Raton boasts an existing roster of businesses ranging from innovative startups to large publicly traded companies. And as the birthplace of IBM's personal computer, Boca Raton has a long history of launching successful and innovative ventures. Your company's success starts with the right location, so if you're looking to hit it out of the park for your business, the Boca Raton Office of Economic Development is your team. Visit businessboca.com. That's businessboca.com.
Joining me right now, we have the newest Yankee, Juan Soto. Juan, welcome to the New York Yankees. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Feel pretty good so far.
It's got to be strange. I mean, there's a lot of things I can't say that I understand about being a Major League Baseball player, but, like, you know, one day you're a Washington National, the next day you're a San Diego Padre. One day you're a San Diego Padre, the next day you're a New York Yankee. I mean, is it, you just wake up and it's like, well, now I'm in a different place, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's just part of the business. It's just part of the game nowadays. It's just tough. It's just tough to go through all that, but definitely happy where I'm at and happy where I've been going through and learning about it and, you know, enjoying the moments.
When you started knowing that you were probably going to be traded, what made the Yankees an attractive option?
I don't know. I just, When I started listening, it was the Yankees all the way. I didn't hear anybody else, actually. There was all more rumors of other teams and things like that, but definitely the Yankees always were the number one team. And I was just focused on my offseason, you know. I definitely talked to the team. They were telling me that they just listen and stuff, but I'm still being part of San Diego. And then from one day to another, they just tell me, like, okay, we're trading you. And this is what we're doing. And I was like, okay, fine. This is another way to learn about the business and everything. The National showed me that part, and I'm just getting used to it.
A lot of history here. When you think about the Yankees, where does your head go?
I mean, that was I was happy, you know. Just being in another team that is going to have a chance to go for a championship, yes, it's always exciting, you know. It's always good to be in a team that it has a chance and they're going to do the best to win a championship. You know, that I think that's the goal at the end of the day. Try to win a championship and try to give your best to the team and the city.
You have won that championship. Obviously, you know, I know you keep pushing for more, but how does that change you? What do you learn about yourself from the process of winning a championship and getting to celebrate that?
I learned a lot of things, a lot of ways how to play the game. And I learned a lot of things about the game. And that was a great moments, great memories of what we have on that time, running through the league and everything. It was exciting moments, you know. I learned a lot of things. I learned about my teammates, about the team, and how the leagues run all this stuff. And it was very cool.
The Yankees offer a lot of things. One thing they offer is Dominican fans, by far the biggest Dominican population in America. How exciting is that for you?
It's going to be really fun. Like I said before, it's going to feel like home. It's going to feel great. I think the energy that Dominicans they bring all over the place is just amazing. We always love to each other. We feel like family every time we go out. It's just great. It's a great feeling. I think it's going to be really exciting.
You don't have to go too far from Yankee Stadium to get some good mango or sancocho.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Yankees are... They have one of the best kitchens in the league, so I think I don't have to go anywhere.
Look, you're still a young guy, but you've already established yourself among some of the greatest Dominican hitters ever. You know, Manny, David Ortiz, Vlad Guerrero, Pujols. I mean, a lot of your numbers at this point in your career is right in line there. How meaningful is it for you to be thought of among names like that from your home country?
It's just great. It tells you a lot of things that all my work, everything that I've been put on, it's been working. Everything I've been trying to do, it's been right there. Thanks God I have the blessed to be healthy in almost every year of my career and I'll be able to pull those numbers out there. But definitely it feels amazing to be compared with those guys when they were playing, I was a fan of them and I was really just enjoying their careers and everything, you know. It feels great to be mentioned around those names and knows that you have a chance to be up there with them.
Who were some of your baseball heroes when you were a kid?
Manny was one of the top ones, and Robinson Cano was another one. I love those guys. Manny, just the way he handles that bat and how he treats every pitch, every swing he takes, it was amazing. And Robbie, just his swing was so smooth. It was so great that I just see myself swinging like that.
Obviously, you know, your clubhouse now, there's another exciting young Dominican player, and Jason Dominguez, going to be a while before he's fully healthy back in action. But what have you seen so far from him? Because he just comes off as such an impressive kid from the outside.
He's great. I think he's an amazing kid. What he's been doing, his recovery and everything, I think he's really positive and what he's been doing, and he's really excited about this year. And I'm more than excited to see him, what he can do in the field and everything. But he's just amazing. I think he's going to be a great player.
Fans were salivating about your power when you got traded here. Left-handed bat like that in Yankee Stadium sounds amazing. Obviously, though, your offensive profile is so much more than power. You're known as one of the best batting eyes in the majors. Is that understanding of the strike zone something that you've always had? Were you always just good at knowing that, or is that something that you really had to learn?
I learned it throughout the years. Definitely, I was a free swinger when I came up to become a professional. But little by little, throughout the Nationals system, they were telling me stuff that I was taking in the game and helping me out with my strike zone and taking better pitches, taking great at-bats, and making great decisions. And I think little by little, I was making that case for me, and I was learning the strike zone little by little, and right now I'm in my sixth year in the big leagues, and I'm still learning about the strike zone and everything. I've been putting into the work to keep grinding and keep getting better on it.
Long before you came up here, you know, there was the stereotype about Dominican baseball, which was, you know, you can't walk off the island. You know, you got to be a free swinger, like you said, everything like that. I think that's changed. I think people realize that's, first off, not true. But did you ever hear that growing up? Is that something that you had people telling you, that you need to show out by, you know, swing, don't look at a pitch?
Yeah. I mean, when we were kids, they were saying, back in the day, they were saying that they pay you to hit, don't take walks, you know? And that was the way we just came into the league, and that was the mindset that we have. We have to swing the bat, we have to make contact, we have to put the ball in play and see what happens. And that was the mentality all the way until we make it to the professionals. And then when I get to the professional league, they were telling me that I have good eye and hand coordination, but I got to take a couple pitches, you know, pitches out of the strike zone. I was making myself out a couple of times instead of just see it and let it get to you and take a good chance and a good pitch.
It's kind of unfair, though. I mean, like, there's always been this kind of idea that, you know, they're power hitters and they strike out, or they're good contact hitters, but they don't have the power. You're not supposed to have all that stuff. It feels a little bit like cheating, man.
I mean, it's just the work, you know? When you see guys like that, like, you see Pujols, and, like, that's why they call him the machine. Because he can do that. He hits for power, he hits for average, and he takes his walks. He got, like, 10 straight years without striking out 100 times. I mean, that's just amazing. And when you look up a guy like that, I think you want to see yourself like that, and you want to get to that spot. And I've been grinding to be one of those guys that are really consistent like that. You know, a guy like Freddie Freeman, like, he won't take a swing off any bad pitch or anything like that. He will take his chances and a good pitches and things like that. And I think that's the right thing to come in the league and try to success.
Because you work so hard to know the strike zone. When you just get a bad call behind the plate, when you know that, like, does that really irritate you? Like, no, I know that's a ball.
At the end of the day, you know, the umpires are human too, yeah. And they make mistakes. The same with us. I mean, sometimes we think a pitch is a ball and it is a strike. We just got to take it. Mm-hmm. Take it like a man and just keep working and see what happens throughout that at bat.
We talked about this a little bit but at the beginning. You've been part of the Yankees family since December, but really, you know, not until you got to spring training is it, you know, does it start feeling real in a sense. When you showed up here, when you get that first day of that reporting day, what were some of the things that you noticed right away about your new team?
The good vibe they have here, they have a good feeling on that clubhouse. It was a great feeling to be in there, and how they welcomed me in. It was pretty cool. That was one of the things that opened my eyes. You know, you have a lot of superstars in that clubhouse, but everybody's like open to do their roles and feel comfortable about it and just feel like a friend, I feel like a brother. You know, that's one of the things that opened my eyes.
Are there things that you had to adjust to?
No, not at all. I mean,
you make it sound easy.
They've really been really good as what I expect. You know, I have a lot of things in my mind, but they're really right on the point where what I was thinking it was going to be. And it's been pretty cool so far.
Do you set statistical benchmarks for a season, whether in counting stats or in percentage rate stats? I mean, do you say, I want to strike out this percentage, I want to barrel up this percentage, things like that, or do you just take it as it comes?
I just take it as it comes. I don't really want to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of good hitters, they say they will love to see their stats in here and there, but I just try to focus and go through it day by day. You know, I try to do my day every day, come to the field, try to work on my stuff and try to be successful that day. If I wasn't, I just forget about that day and focus in the other day, you know, because it's a long season. Staying one day and thinking about one day, we gotta keep going every day, forget about what you did. We start over again every day.
It is a long season, and it's a strange season in some ways because you're here, you're this huge move that the Yankees made in the offseason, but it could just be 1 year, you know, I mean, there's no way to know what's going to happen. I think it's probably a little strange for Yankees fans because they have you here, they want to fall in love, but it's like you got to date first in a sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you, I know, look, you have an agent who's going to take care of us, you have all the business stuff, Is it ever hard, though, to just say, like, you know, I just got to trust and whatever happens, happens, and I can't control that right now?
For me, I'm just going to focus on baseball. That's my mindset. I'm going to be right there playing baseball every day, hustling every day, try to do my best to help the team.
Easy enough. Are you a city guy? I mean, you have 6 months where you're going to be in New York at least. Are you a guy who wants to see the city, wants to get out a little bit, or not so much?
We will see. We will see how it's going. I know New York a little bit. You know, I've been walking around the streets since I played with the Nationals. You know, we come to New York mm-hmm. 3 times a year. So I know New York pretty well, I think. Not as much as people think, but I know a little bit.
There are a lot of good hitters in that clubhouse. You're used to being around a lot of good hitters. San Diego had a lot of good hitters, right? Obviously, you know, a guy like Aaron, his reputation, everyone knows it, everything like that. But some of the other guys in that room, who's really impressed you so far?
There's so many guys. I mean, Anthony Volpe and Rizzo, how these guys, those routines and everything, it's just impressive. Even Giancarlo, you know, he's been working on a lot of stuff, and it's pretty cool to see those guys hit the ball for power. It's just amazing when you hit with Giancarlo, Judge, and all those guys.
It's a pretty fun batting practice group, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see how hard those guys can hit the ball, you know. It's even like, what can I say? It's like, it's even like challenging yourself. It's more like like impress you impress about it, but you want to be like them. You want to hit the ball like hard. You want to be on that group. That's what I feel like. It's just incredible to see those guys hit the ball that hard.
Meanwhile, you play out in the field. You look to your right, and there's a 6'7", you know, center fielder. That's got to be a little bit of a different sight for you over there.
Yeah, I mean, he's 6'7", and he knows what he's doing, but he do a great job to feel like we are the same, you know. He's really good about it. Everybody knows he's the captain and everything, but he really make you feel like he's part of the whole group, you know. He's no different of any of those guys in the clubhouse. Everybody knows he's the captain, but he's really good at let everybody know that we all the same, and we all gonna be treated the same, and we're gonna push in the same way the whole year long.
I had a chance to talk to some of the pitchers on this team today, and they're talking about what other teams are going to face when they have Aaron Judge and Juan Soto back-to-back, you know, whichever order it goes in. How punishing do you think that is on a pitcher to have to get through this lineup, but specifically to have to go back-to-back with you guys?
It's going to be great, you know? It's going to be fun, definitely, for us and to see those guys out there, but we will see. We will see how everything's going to turn around. I hope we all, not only him and me, I hope the whole lineup starts the season hot, and we can have a really good start going throughout the year. But definitely, it's going to be fun. I think that's the only thing I'm thinking about, that how fun it's going to be hitting back-to-back right there.
You weren't here last year. It was a frustrating year for the Yankees. You know that. Do you sense the hunger in that room and how excited people are to kind of get back out there for opening day?
Yeah, I feel those guys, they are really hungry to win games, you know. They are working on everything that is going to help the team to win games. And I think not only the players, but the coaches, staff, everybody is like, it's really hungry to come next year and try to win a championship. I think that's the main goal right now.
How excited are you to be part of that?
It's great. Like I said before, it's great to be part of a team that wants to win, you know. I've been in San Diego, it was the same thing. Everybody was hungry to win, and it feels amazing. And the Nationals, when we win it too, everybody wants a piece of it. So everybody wants to win, and we all push together. And I think that's the same vibe I'm getting here, that everybody wants to win, everybody wants to do their part, and it feels good so far.
Juan Soto, New York Yankee, thank you so much for taking the time.
All right, thank you guys.
Hi, this is Anthony Volpe. You're listening to the New York Yankees official podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, this is Clark Schmidt. You're listening to the New York Yankees official podcast.
Welcome back, Nate. It's kind of one of those things from the minute that the trade is announced with Juan Soto, we're kind of saying, man, wouldn't it be great if we had Juan Soto on our opening day episode? And sometimes it works out. And I don't know, I had a lot of fun talking to him. I had a lot of fun learning about him. I had a lot of fun writing about him for the April issue. And the last thing on the list is it's time to have a lot of fun watching him.
For sure. I mean, he really, he delivered there. You know, he's a guy who, I mean, we all know what he's capable of doing on the baseball field with the bat in his hand. But it's kind of a rare opportunity to get to hear him speak at length the way he did during that last segment. So I found it to be really interesting. Another guy on this team who's just, I mean, such a professional hitter. I mean, you can tell, like, just, you know, I found myself thinking about, you know, how fun it would be to be a fly on the wall, like in the batting cages when he's down there with, you know, Judge and Stanton and Rizzo and Volpe, and, you know, they're just talking hitting. Cause, you know, the impression I get is that Juan Soto is definitely a serious professional and a serious student of the game when it comes to hitting.
You talk about being a fly on the wall. I don't think you have to be a fly on the wall, because those guys you mentioned, everything that they said to me during spring training, everything I know they said to other people was, they themselves love being part of those conversations. There was nothing casual about them. It was really just, they know. And I mean, this is all the way down from Aaron Judge, obviously pretty good hitter in his own right, to the youngest players during spring training. They know that they are standing there talking to probably the best complete hitter in the major leagues right now. Just the guy who understands hitting probably as well as anybody in the league right now. And I wrote a lot about this for April and a story that'll come out on in time for the Yankees home opener, but you hear a lot of talking about how you can't believe that you get that kind of hitter in the lineup, and, you know, one of the best hitters in the game. And you have to say to some of these guys, hey, which one are you talking about, Aaron Judge or Juan Soto? And that's a really fun question to ask if you're a major league manager or general manager.
Yeah. I mean, this is what we, you know, kind of dreamed of, kind of hoped for after the end of last season. You know, there was one player out there that we all had at the top of our list. If we can go out and get this guy, it would be a huge difference maker. And, you know, credit to Brian Cashman and his crew. They went out and they got him, you know, had to give up a lot to get him. But of course, you're going to have to give up a lot when you're trading for a player of Juan Soto's caliber. So super excited that we had the chance to talk to him here on the podcast. And boy, I just can't wait to watch him do his thing out there today and for the next 162 and hopefully more.
It really is something. I mean, I think I got it from a lot of different people when I was talking to them. Gerrit Cole mentioning, you know, obviously the Dodgers top three of Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, that's formidable. Don't get me wrong, but he put what the Yankees are going to throw out there right up there. And it's just, he said, it's just so incredibly taxing as a pitcher to have to do that, to have to make your way through that lineup. And we're recording this, of course, before opening day. So we're in that weird little hybrid, you know, zone of everything's optimistic. And also you're looking at all the little things that might have gone wrong during spring training, and your brain's kind of roller coasting between the optimism and the terror, if you will. Certainly, you know, I just mentioned Gerrit Cole. Well, Gerrit Cole won't be starting opening day. Things change pretty quickly during spring training. But if you go down just, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 in that lineup, is every single one of those hitters Aaron Judge or Juan Soto? No. But there's not really a lot of holes in that lineup. And the thing is, every one of those hitters gets better because of the number of bullets a pitcher has to fire to deal with guys like Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. And suddenly you're talking about guys with a lot of all-star notations on their baseball reference page as almost afterthoughts. Then you realize, like, oh yeah, by the way, you get through Aaron Judge, you get through Juan Soto, So fine, here's Gleyber Torres. Here's Anthony Rizzo. Here's Giancarlo Stanton. It doesn't quit. And is it going to mean that the Yankees score 10 runs every game? No, but Clark Schmidt was pretty clear with me. It's going to feel like they're up 2-0 every start. They just know that the offense has got them in a sense.
Yeah, it was funny to hear from Clark, and I know the other Yankees pitchers probably feel the same way about just the relief in not having to be on the mound facing this lineup, particularly Aaron Judge and Juan Soto back-to-back, because it's just going to be exhausting. All of these guys up and down the lineup, like you said, are great hitters who are capable of putting together really long, tough at-bats, no matter how they end. The pitchers are going to have to be really sharp. They're going to have to, they can't take a moment off. They can't let their guard down for a second. So I'm really excited to watch it unfold. And, you know, the other thing that struck me about your conversation with Juan Soto is that it's always a positive, I feel like, when you bring in players who have won a World Series. And clearly Juan, pretty much every time he spoke since he's gotten here, has mentioned wanting to be a champion again. Like that's why he plays. And so I think just having guys like that, like Anthony Rizzo in there, I think it's not even so much like a direct thing where they're saying, you know, oh, you know, this is what you have to do if you want to win a World Series. No, I think it's more just, I think there's a confidence probably that comes with having done it and knowing that you have what it takes. You know, I think that confidence probably rubs off on the people who haven't experienced it yet. So, you know, Soto is just such an amazing fit for this team in so many different ways. It's going to be great to see him do his thing this first series here in Houston.
I think one interesting thing for the Yankees, too, about him, and he spoke about this plainly, I mean, is he's a guy who, like you said, he has the World Series ring, so he has all the competitive success. He also has kind of had his heart broken already on the business side. You know, he's learned the business side of baseball, too, in ways that were hard for him. It was hard for him to get traded from the Nationals, and then it got to the point where he was almost numb when it happened from the Padres. And so you look at, obviously, a walk year, which it is for Soto. Unfortunately, the Yankees have him for 1 year right now, and I know they want more, but they have him for 1 year right now. And you know that a walk year can be a real opportunity, and there's guys, including, of course, Aaron Judge, who only hit 60 home runs in his walk year and won the MVP award. It doesn't seem like it's the type of thing that will faze him, though, because it seems like he has already kind of been able to disconnect himself in some ways from that part of the game. And it is a year-long audition. It is going to be stressful. You do know that he is a guy who has already turned down a life-changing amount of money at one point in his career. And I think all that stuff kind of just adds to the sense of his acquired knowledge and the intellect that he has. He has experienced the highest of highs in the game, and he has experienced baseball at its most businesslike. And I, you know, it's not going to be new for him this year.
All before the age of 26.
Bonkers, man.
It really is incredible. I mean, to know that you have a player with this type of resume, batting title, runner-up in the MVP voting, won the home run derby, three-time All-Star, all this stuff, and he's going to hit free agency when he's still so young in his mid-20s.
That never happens anymore, by the way. That truly does. If you look at baseball business right now, players like that don't hit free agency. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you don't see 26-year-old All-Star MVP caliber free agents anymore. It just doesn't happen.
No. And so clearly Juan Soto, he's got a great future ahead of him, and he's got a great head on his shoulders, the way he's able to just kind of block out all the noise and block out all the business stuff and concentrate on doing his job to a level that is just incredible. I mean, Major League Baseball's leader in on-base percentage, career on-base percentage, .421. Tell me that's not going to help this year. So I really like him. I was over the moon when we got him. And, you know, now it's time to let the chips fall where they may. You know, it's interesting, too, that we start in Houston, where he put on such a show in that World Series for the Nationals. I don't know how many people remember, but that was the first team that ever won a best of seven championship series by winning all four games on the road. The Nationals went down to Houston, won games 1 and 2. Came back home and lost the three home games, and then went back down and had to beat Verlander in game 6 in Houston, who was the Cy Young winner that year. And then, you know, they ended up winning game 7 as well. Just an incredible performance. And Juan Soto was just turned 21 during that series. So he's had a lot of really incredible experience already in his career. And now he gets to take all that experience and take all that talent and put it towards helping the Yankees win here in 2024.
one of the things that I think is most exciting, I was talking to Omar Minaya, and this is in the story I wrote for April, and what he told me, I mean, if you go back to when the Padres visited Yankee Stadium on Memorial Day weekend, he was the one who really made me go back and watch that. And sure enough, the reception that he got from, obviously, all baseball fans are interested, intrigued, amazed by Juan Soto, but he is understandably a legend among Dominican fans. And you would have to say right now, I mean, already one of the greatest Dominican hitters of all time. And yeah, sure, going back to watch those games, you saw the reaction he got. You saw the fire in the stands. Luis Rojas was telling me that he was, he was noticing it. Luis Rojas also Dominican heritage. And, that makes me just kind of go back to where I've been the last couple of days, which was, in Mexico City, watching the Yankees play the Diablo Rojos. And it was certainly, I think, the weirdest way to end spring training that you could have, because, the Yankees always, you expect kind of the first spring training game to be a little bit like opening day, and then the actual opening day to be like opening day, and then presumably your home opener to be like opening day. Well, the Yankees added two more, because both of those games in Mexico City were like opening day combined with the World Baseball Classic. It was completely amazing. And while Juan Soto wasn't there, guys like Giancarlo Stanton, Anthony Volpe, Jose Trevino, the reaction that the Yankees got, the reaction that the Diablo Rojos got, it was a truly incredible way to, quote unquote, wind down spring training.
Yeah, that's a funny point you bring up there. What was the, were there Yankee fans in attendance? Was the crowd mostly in favor of the home team? How would you describe the crowd breakdown there?
So Yankees hats absolutely everywhere. The Yankees are huge in Mexico City. And it was one of those things that everyone kind of said before we got there. And that was part of the reason the Yankees were going. And I know that the players said this, and I can tell you, if you think that they are, just saying the right things for their nice Mexican hosts, no, let me assure you, it was stark, the support that the Yankees got, the love that the Yankees felt. But what I thought was the coolest thing for me, and, I'll pat myself on the back here, because as we were leaving there, everyone I asked seemed to agree with me, all the players and Aaron Boone. Last year, MLB played two regular season games in Mexico City, and this year they are too. In April, I'm blanking right now. I think one of them is the Astros going to play in Mexico City, and that's really cool. And you figure that, like, when the Yankees went to London and played the Red Sox, that was really cool, obviously. And it would have been very cool if these spring training games were Yankees versus Red Sox. But it was so much more cool to me that the Yankees were playing the Diablo Rojos. Like, so you were getting the MLB side and the Mexican Baseball League side, and you were seeing the whole thing together. And if the experience was so different, you could never think that it was normal. You could never think that it was a regular game. Giancarlo Stanton was very clear. Like, this was the World Baseball Classic, and this was the exact same atmosphere. So, of course, look, the Yankees lost the two games. It was spring training. They did not have a representative lineup. I don't think anyone was panicking other than, fans who might see a headline that the Yankees lost to a Mexican team and think that the sky is falling. That wasn't the case. But the atmosphere was wild. And I can't stress enough about how much I loved those fans, just how much energy they had, how fun it was. It was incredible. And that was both when, in the second game, the Yankees went out to an early lead and the place was going crazy. And then, the Diablo Rojos had an 8-run third inning and the place was going completely crazy. I thought it was wonderful that it was a spring training game, because as much as these guys want to compete, as much as these guys want to win everything, there was no sense that anyone could feel bad about anything that was happening. It was so euphoric and so awesome. And no one left there being like, oh no, we lost two games. It was just what an experience.
That's awesome. I'm glad that you and Ari were down there to be able to document it for Yankees Magazine. I was reading some of the accounts of some really nice moments for some of the players on the Yankees roster. Victor Gonzalez getting to pitch in front of his home country, and Jonathan Loaiza, I think, even though he's from Nicaragua, his family was able to make the trip up for those games. So there were just the Concerna. I mean, there was just a lot of nice moments throughout the two games that really made it sound like it was a worthwhile trip for sure.
It was overwhelming in that regard. Those moments all transcended it so much, and they were so visible to everybody there. But look, I mean, and the flip side to that, you know, Robinson Cano putting on an absolute show in the first game. How could you not love that as someone who's, you know, engaged with the Yankees, and to watch that and to watch him that way? And Robinson Cano is 41 years old. Robinson Cano does not need to do this anymore. He just loves it. And when you see him, you know, in that uniform and the smile on his face and the love he gets getting from the fans, and I don't know, like, again, I'm trying, maybe I'm like thinking out loud here as I try to figure out the story I'm writing, but I did not know a lot about Mexican baseball before this. And what I can tell you is, first off, the level of play was extraordinary. I mean,
yeah, I was going to ask you, are they also in their spring training still, or did their season start?
This is the end of their spring training as well. But also, you have to remember, you know, they weren't traveling with a limited split squad. So they had all of their team. They just changed the rules. I think it was this year. It might have been last year. I don't want to get it wrong, but I might. They have increased the number of international players you can have on a team. So I think now it's 20 players. There were a lot of former major league players. Recognizable names were there, more than I realized. You know, when I'm keeping score at a baseball game, I think a lot of people do this. I'll put a circle around a really good play. And I had a lot of circles. I think we were told to expect kind of AAA. And I hope I'm not being offensive when I say that. But you know, when I was asking around beforehand, what's it going to look like? That was the sense we got, AAA. And maybe that's the case. And again, you know, did I also see a player totally lose a ball in the lights and miss it by 15 feet? Yes. But diving catches, jumping catches, incredible plays like running along the line. A third baseman made a wild play on a high chopper, running into foul territory, and got Anthony Volpe. I mean, so not like, you know, a slow runner. He got Anthony Volpe. And this stuff kept happening. And it was just good baseball in the most fun atmosphere I've been to this side of a World Baseball Classic game. It was wild. It was awesome.
Nice. Well, you know, maybe down the road in 2024, we'll be writing a feature story about Oswaldo Cabrera's, rebound season. And we'll look back at the trip to Mexico City as the jumping off point.
You looked good, man.
Well, John, I'm happy for you. I was back here in the Bronx proofreading for two straight days.
That's not all you were doing, Nate. I think if I'm not mistaken, you were also eating quite a bit, taking in some calories as you prepared for the new concessions at the stadium. What's your report? Because I will say I missed my favorite day of the year at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah. Just like the on-field product, there's a lot to look forward to in the concessions at Yankee Stadium this year. You know, every year they generally roll out, you know, some new offerings, new items. This year there's even a new head chef. Robert Flowers is the executive chef overseeing all the restaurant areas and the concession stands at Yankee Stadium. So I met with Robert today. He came from, he was working in California at a big ski resort out there. So certainly a lot different environment that he's in now, but he was just so excited to be here in New York. He's, a native of Western New York. So grew up a Yankee fan. He had some good stories to tell about that. But the food is, I mean, I had some amazing stuff today. The one that stood out to me, there's a chef by the name of Christian Petroni, who was on a couple of Food Network shows. He's a Bronx native, grew up going to Yankee games, Italian guy who makes one heck of a meatball. And there's two locations, one in section 125 and one in 310, where you can get his meatballs and this cheesy garlic bread with he made it a point to say that it's 8-hour marinara sauce. The sauce is slow cooked. That was super delicious. Had a delicious chicken sandwich from Fuku. What else did I have? I had this mac and cheese with bacon and ranch in it. Oh my gosh. And this was all like before noon. So it was it was quite a morning. I was glad to have skipped breakfast.
And I think what I always love about this day, and I think it's important to mention, is everything that Nate just brought up, everything that you're seeing on social media, if you've been looking at the Yankees beat writers who were there for this, every single thing that the Yankees put on preview for this event is available to all fans. This isn't stuff that you can only get if you're in a special club or that, you know, you need to have a crazy, crazy elite exclusive ticket to get. The offerings that every single fan in that stadium can get, it's just off the charts.
Yeah. And, you know, last year, one of the big draws was the debut of the 99 burger, you know, named in honor of the Yankees captain, Aaron Judge. And they started out selling only 99 of them per game. And the lines were like, I mean, before first pitch, they would sell out of these things. And then I think they expanded it to maybe they were doing like 199, but that was from like a cart in the concourse on the second level. Now they have their own permanent concession stand, and they're going to sell as many burgers as people want to buy. So no longer do you have to worry about not getting to the 99 burger stand in time to get one of those.
Good news for everybody involved. Nate, I think, I think it's opening day. I think that it's time to stop talking and start watching. But before we do this, I'm so excited that we are debuting the history books segment today. We will have our museum curator, Brian Richards, giving us, as only he can, some really, really arcane Yankees stories, trivia, what have you, in every episode. The first episode, which you're about to hear, it's about just, you know, a crazy, weird, accidental rain check situation, and also a lesser-known story about the first day that Babe Ruth wore the number 3. To give you a little bit of background here, there's a podcast, a sports podcast that I absolutely love called Hang Up and Listen. It's by Slate. And the mantra of that podcast, if you will, is remember Zelmo Beatty. And Zelmo Beatty was a NBA player in the 60s and 70s, and certainly he was very good, and, you know, he was known. But their point is, he's not someone you hear talked about a lot today, but you can't truly understand today's game without understanding the past. And if you want to celebrate the sport, you need to celebrate Zelmo Beatty too. You have to remember Zelmo Beatty. You have to remember these guys. And that's our goal here, is if we're telling stories that you know, then we're doing it wrong. And obviously today's has one on Babe Ruth, but the goal is most of these to have names that you've never heard before. Because that's Yankees history. I say a lot, Yankees history is much more than Monument Park.
Absolutely. And Brian Richards is the foremost expert on the subject. You know, whenever I am diving into the deep waters of Yankees history that, I've said before, is among my, favorite types of stories to write for Yankees publications, are those stories where you kind of unearth, hidden gems that have been lost to time, or you try and kind of recreate, the feeling of what it was like to be at Yankee Stadium in 1923 or what have you. Brian is always, such a valuable resource to me. He knows everything, and his stories are always fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to this segment throughout this season of the Yankees podcast.
And to that point, by the way, when we started coming up with this, my idea was, hey, Nate, why don't you put together a little thing for every episode? Because this is kind of your wheelhouse in some ways. And you like immediately said, nope, Brian Richards. And we were both just like, oh yeah, obviously Brian Richards. And you'll hear why right now as we go to our first history books segment for this year.
I love opening day. It's so full of hope and promise for something new, but it's so full of so many great traditions too. One of my favorite opening days from Yankees history that not too many people know about is in 1905. Now, a few years ago, the Yankees actually switched to all digital ticketing. We don't have any more paper tickets. That actually would have been the second time we had an opening day without paper tickets. The first time we did it was in 1905. We tried to have our home opener on Good Friday, April 21st, over at Hilltop Park against the Washington Senators. What started out as a beautiful day turned into a torrential downpour. The Senators were leading 3-1 after 3.5 innings. The umpire called it quits, the tarp was pulled, and fans went rushing for the box office to try and get their rain checks. Well, when they got there, the Yankees administration realized they hadn't brought enough rain checks for the 15,000 people who were in attendance. So the decision they made was that for the following day's game, on Saturday, April 22nd, everybody would be welcome back, everybody would be admitted free of charge, with the assumption that it would be primarily the people who'd been there on Friday returning on Saturday. So when they expected 15,000 people to show up, they had to have been surprised when between 25,000, as many as 40,000 people showed up the following day. They said the subways were packed with people, people were riding on top of streetcars, everybody wanted to show up for this free ball game at Hilltop Park. So everybody was admitted in. The fans were actually standing, ringing around the outfield. They had to create special ground rules for the day, but everybody was waved in. And there was a great quote about the crowd, which was actually surprisingly well-behaved, very considerate of each other. The New York Times said, "The come all ye occasion might have been a riot if the crowds had not been of the proverbial good-natured, happy-go-lucky people of Manhattan." And I feel like with the traditional views of New Yorkers, that's really an expression that hasn't been used too much since those days. But hey, 1905 was a different world. And little fun fact about that game, that actually was the first time that fans could take the subway to a Yankees game. The West Side branch of the New York City subway had opened in late 1904, but it only ran up to 157th Street, which was one stop away from where the ballpark was at 165th to 168th. So fans could ride up to 157th, but then they had to walk uphill or pay to take a horse-drawn hack up the hill to 165th Street, where the ballpark was erected. And that's not the only great opening day story. Another story that's a little bit lost to time kind of blends in with a story that is better known. The story that is pretty well known is in 1929, the Yankees debuted permanent uniform numbers on the backs of their jerseys. And for the starting position players, of course, those uniform numbers corresponded with where you hit in the batting order. Babe Ruth batted third, ergo number three, Lou Gehrig batted fourth, number four, and so on. But what a lot of people don't know is that opening day was a very special day for Babe Ruth because the day before, April 17th, was Babe's wedding day. Now, opening day had been rained out twice. It was originally scheduled for April 16th. It was rained out the 16th and 17th. But at 5:50 in the morning on April 17th, Babe Ruth married his longtime girlfriend, Claire Merritt Hodgson, at St. Gregory's Roman Catholic Church on West 90th Street on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. They were trying to avoid the photographers, hence the early hour. They planned to get married around 6:30. Well, they figured it was better to show up even earlier. That attempt was not successful. By the time the wedding ceremony and the mass that followed concluded, there were probably 200 people waiting to greet Babe and Claire. When you're Babe Ruth, it's awfully hard to have privacy. The game was rained out that day. The newlyweds celebrated their wedding with a large breakfast at their new apartment on West 88th Street. And the following day, when opening day was finally played, it was a very chilly April 18th. Between 35,000 and 40,000 people braved the cold to show up at Yankee Stadium. Babe Ruth stepped to home plate in the bottom of the first inning. Now, this is the first time he's worn a number three on his back, and he's facing Red Ruffing, who at the time was a pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. And on a curveball from Ruffing, Ruth hit a line drive home run over 400 feet the opposite way into the left field grandstand seats at Yankee Stadium. Most of his home runs were hit to right field, but this home run went the opposite way. So the cheers rained down like never before. Babe doffed his cap with special pride as he rounded second. And as he went back to the dugout, he spotted Claire, his newlywed bride, sitting in the box seats, and he blew a kiss to her. That opening day home run was a gift to his wife. Now, not too many of us can give or receive a wedding gift like that. When you're married to Babe Ruth, life's going to be just a little bit different. Happy opening day, everybody. It's been great being with you. Looking forward to sharing more stories through the season. And come see us at the New York Yankees Museum, presented by Bank of America, right here at Yankee Stadium.
Nate, I think that's where we leave it. Happy opening day, man.
Happy opening day, John. Let's go.
We'll speak to y'all soon. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jose Trevino. For more stories like these, be sure to pick up Yankees Magazine. You can get a copy the next time you're at the ballpark or by calling 800-GO-YANKS or visiting yankees.com/publications. Thanks for listening.
The New York Yankees official podcast is a production of the Yankees Magazine Podcast Network. It's produced by me, John Schwartz, with assistance from the entire team at Yankees Magazine, as well as incredible support from the New York Yankees Media Relations Department, in particular Jason Zillow, Michael Margolis, and Caitlin Brennan. Thanks also to our awesome social media team, Brian Callahan, Julia Shore, and Alex King. If you're not subscribed, what are you waiting for? We're available wherever you listen to your podcasts or at yankees.com/podcasts. Leave us a review, leave us a rating. You can even send us your thoughts over email, podcasts@yankees.com. For more information about the stories we discussed today, visit yankees.com/magazine, where you can read all of our long-form content. If you'd like to subscribe to Yankees Magazine or purchase individual copies of the magazine, yearbook, media guide, or anything else, please visit yankees.com/publications or call us at 800-GO-YANKS. Of course, you can also stay up to date on everything happening here at the stadium by following us on Twitter, @YanksMagazine, or by liking us on Facebook @YankeesMagazine. That's it. See you next time, and go Yanks!